Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, ghouls, goblins, and gargoyles, and giggling dwarves. Actually, the giggling dwarf would be a great name for a pub, wouldn't it? But enough of my prattling. Welcome to another exciting episode of Narrative Gaming for the Mantic Universe podcast. You'll notice that I'm on my own today. Just me. That's right, Danny Graves, Captain Flash himself, is on the case with something a little bit different. So we've chatted in previous podcasts about different types of gamer and also how to make your games more narrative. But however, we can chat all we want, but today it is time for action. So I have left the safety of the Mup studio and I'm braving the most wretched hive of scum and villainy imaginable. That's right, I'm in High Wycombe. Now, High Wycombe is famed across England for being slightly north of the M40, but it is also home for some of the best competitive gamers in the country, and they're currently lurking at the Magic and Mayhem tournament, which is being run at the brilliant Tabletop Republic gaming shop. So I've decided I'm going to brave this nest of vipers and see how competitive gaming can add in some narrative fun. So, in previous episodes, we've followed Walt and his lovely Scar Orc army and the narrative background he wrote for that, but not all of us have the time or energy for such a bold undertaking. So instead of writing my own, I'm going to blatantly steal it from somebody else. I've just finished the fantastic book Pride of the King by Ben Stoddard, and books, movies, even a little bit of snippet of background, they can provide oodles of inspiration for armies, themes, and narrative games. So I read The Ascent of the Goblin King by Rob Berman and thought of a goblin ambush army. Well, it didn't seem that silly after all. And after reading Broken Alliance, I went and got myself a halfling army. So that's for the future, but right now we're into the tournament. And as everybody knows, I am the greatest Free Dwarf player in the world. So I've been waiting for this book to come out for a long time, and it really didn't disappoint. In fact, I enjoyed it so much that for the first time ever, I'm actually taking a regular Dwarf army. So, bleh! I know, but don't get me wrong. I still think Imperial Dwarves are snot-licking vomit slurpers, and Pride of the King even proves that in writing. However, Garrick Heavyhand is a total badass, and so much of an outcast rebel, he's practically a free dwarf anyway, so I can keep my morals and my anti-imperial bigotry intact. So, rather than paint a new army, I've got my free dwarves, and I've added in a couple of battle drillers. I converted those out of some plastic dwarves, adding on some Vermin nightmare drills. I got the Overdrive Iron Ancestor in a mystery box, so I've slapped a gun on him, and he's going to be my favourite Ironheart. And I've also painted up the new Dungeon Saga Origins Rawdin figure, because the model is epic, and I'm going to use him as Garrick. So, only four models painted, and I've got a new army to try out and tell the tales of Garrick Heavyhand and his clan as they face the horrendous foes on the edge of the Empire. So, as for the list itself, I was listening to Walt's adventures at Clash of Kings Australia, and I saw that Jeff Treish had won the tournament with a sort of similar list, so I'm going to blatantly steal that too. Maximum effort? Not really. It's minimum effort, isn't it? Minimum effort, maximum fun. So now, Magic and Mayhem is a special tournament in that it has a way of determining what magic items you can take. And there are several other TOs here in attendance who have done fun and fanciful things to add narrative elements to their events too. So join me, dear listener, as the narrative gets competitive. There, Michael Smith, who is one of the Smith clan. He's one of the best competitive gamers in the country. And last year you came in second at Masters?
Yes, only second.
Second. And looking at your list today with the three Decimator Hordes, I can only describe it as Angry Middle Child list. So Michael runs the Warfare Tournament in Farnborough every November with his two brothers. So would you like to tell me some of the narrative aspects that you put on your awesome terrain tables?
Yep, thanks for having me, Danny. So, Warfare, we've got pieces of unique terrain on each table. So my brothers and I have put a lot of love and effort into our terrain to make it what I believe is the best looking terrain on the UK tournament scene.
This is true.
And every table has a piece of different terrain that has a special rule that can affect the game. So that generals, when they come to the table, they're always faced with a unique and hopefully exciting challenge on how it will affect their army on the tabletop. So some of these rules, they're similar to Happy Thrift, so we've taken some of the terrain from that and twiddled it a bit to bring it in line with the right height for blocking terrain. But there are also probably about at least a dozen pieces of terrain that are all unique rules. But what we've done is to make sure that there are rules within the game itself already there. So it's not just, oh, your unit suddenly can look at someone and kill them. It's all, this unit gains Wind Blast, or it's inspired, or it has Slayer. It's all rules that are already in the game. So it's hopefully not too broken.
My personal favourite was when Ally McSween jumped out of a pool of bloody skulls, getting extra rampage, and then fluffed all the rolls anyway. But yep. It's beautiful little thematic things like that really stick in your memory and can really add some beautiful narrative moments to the game. So when's Warfare this year?
Warfare is the 16th and 17th of November in Farnborough.
Excellent. So hopefully we'll see some of you there. I think I've already got my ticket and can't wait. In Bournemouth in February, done with the marvellous John Guns, who designed a load of brilliant cards to add a little bit of narrative element into the games. John's currently finishing up his game, so Andy's going to have to fill in for him. So Andy, can you tell us about the cards and what they involved?
The cards we produced, basically we produced three different abilities of winning the tournament, basically. We had the Triple Crown, which basically meant you could either win for painting, you could win for the general overall score, or for these challenge cards. The challenge cards basically came in the form of, oh, can you kill off, say, five of the enemy cavalry units, or can you kill off five of enemy monsters? So you could pick them each turn. Each game, you didn't have to tell your opponent what you had, and you could sort of tailor it to what you wanted. There was one we had that was called Rusty Dice, which basically you count up however many double ones and you get that many extra points onto your challenge score. It didn't have any effect on the tournament score, but it just added a little bit of extra narrative with an extra prize at the end.
A little bit of extra fluff and fun.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So you're doing a beachhead again next year?
Hopefully, yes, we will do beachhead again next year, but it all depends on other tournaments and what we're all doing.
Excellent. So, yeah. And you do Easter Endurance as well?
We're doing Easter Endurance, which is actually next week, which is in April, which is actually an ambush event, which is six games of ambush at 745 points.
So surely you could fit in 10 games of ambush at 745 points.
I think it's 20 or 25 minutes upside. So normally most people finish within 20 minutes anyway, because it's such a small amount of models on such a small board.
Fast, fun, and beautiful.
Yes.
Cheers, Andy, and hopefully see you at Beachhead next year.
Cheers, thank you.
Now, at the Magic of Mayhem tournament organiser himself, Rob Phipps. So tell me, Rob, how magic-y is it, and how much mayhem has there been?
There's not been as much mayhem as I would like, but there's been plenty of magic items that have gone down a storm, I believe.
So we've played five games over the weekend, so tell us some of the different things that you've put in the games just to make them that extra little bit magic-y.
Well, we had the Baba Yaga house, which was a moving piece of terrain that moved across the battlefield at a predictable rate every turn, that did a dread aura, basically, to effect. And it affected both armies, but it also would put people out of position on charges and gave cover. And it was just a little model that I printed a load of and painted.
I brought my own that had a hobbit on it, so yeah. It was Baba Yogurt instead of Baba Yaga.
Indeed, you know, I could have painted one less.
Sorry about that.
Never mind.
So tell us about the magic items.
So we did do a bit of playtesting for the magic items to try and make sure they were balanced out. We ended up with 14 items in total, each trying to be a bit more unique than some of the items in the book. Some were sort of similar, like the Barbarian's Longsword, which was a combination of the Mace of Crushing and the Sword of Striking. Other items were like rules, like we had the Radiance of Life item. And
the Orb of Light, giving one unit the ability to ignore stealthy, helped me take out a Void Lurker on turn one, which was beautiful. And tell us about the Wheel of Extra fun.
Ah, the Wheel of Wacky, yes. So this is a 14-segment spinning wheel with the amount of magic item allowance that you can add to your army, which is rolled randomly each turn. And that will also allow for you to take some of the extra magic items that we had created, which were sort of segmented to be chosen between each player. And each item in the deck had a counter item to it. So we made sure that you could take something to counter it. Like, you had the Radiance of Life, there was a Cloak of Death item. There was the Defense 6 against shooting attacks, but it did strip things like Pathfinder and Strider and Thunderous Charge. But then I put in one item that nobody chose was the Scroll, which was a one-use-only any library spell, level 2 casting. But you could choose it when you cast it, so it was very versatile, but nobody sort of saw that as the counter to the Torcedo with Alchemist Curse, for example. So you're like, yeah. Ah, that's how I get it.
Ah, well, I had a... Because of the points difference, you'd basically do your army list, but leave an allowance for points for magic items, and then add whatever's on the wheel to that. So on one game, I had the chance to take 105 points of magic items. Another game, I only got 55 points worth of magic items. So, and then we had to bid each of them. So that really affected some of the games. Having the crystal pendant on my Brock Riders severely screwed Todd over. But his Hammer of Measure Force did the same for me. So had some brilliant moments during the game. Yeah. What else have you seen?
Well, also the tactical choosing of the items as well. So, for example, John Quayle often chose...
Him.
Fire oil, because he had lots of mummies, so he didn't want his opponents to have it. So he was denying that ability for his opponents. So you can't double up on the magic item on the same table. So,
well, this podcast is all about adding narrative into competitive, and as John is one of the most competitive gamers in the country, that seems like exactly the type of thing that he would do to his opponent.
Yes, and it's only a 5-point item.
5 points, and he gets the glee of putting the other person in their place. Shame on you, John.
Yeah, although he didn't get to do that on his last game.
Oh, what a shame. Anyway, thank you, Rob. I believe we've got stuff to get on with, so I'll let you get back to teeing and owing. Cheers.
You.
And finally, I'm here with Mark Cunningham, who is responsible for all this mess in the southeast. I believe it must have been about 6-7 years ago I attended the carnage in Guildford. Slaughter in the southeast in Guildford, which was my second Kings of War tournament, and it pretty much got me hooked. I played you there, I believe,
yeah.
And his Shroud of the Reaper tournaments have basically, everybody who went to them thought, this is brilliant, I want to do my own. And now the southeast of England is the hotbed for tournaments in the entire world. So Mark, give yourself a round of applause.
Oh yeah, and it's brilliant. And we've got to a point where we're almost at saturation point, where we're fighting for each other for weekends.
It's a pain in the backside, but it's a good position to be in.
Yeah, oh yeah, and almost in a position that most of the top leading players are from the southeast now, because we've got most of the
practice. Yep,
and no, it's great. And you've got different styles of tournament already in the southeast, let alone the rest of the UK.
So I was speaking to the other TOs and what exciting little things they do to change the games, make it a little bit different, a little bit more fun, a little bit more narrative. And you have a special character, I believe, the Reaper.
Yeah, I have we always have on our Shroud of Reaper tournaments hosted by us a Reaper special character, which has been anywhere from an infantry to a Titan and everything in between. The current one coming up, it will be May, which will be Darth Reaper, because it's Star Wars Day.
May the 4th be with you.
That's it. And Christmas, we have a Christmas-themed one with Santa's Chariot. And it's always trying to push a little bit of boundaries on that, but not breaking the game. And it's the fun award, because that's, in one respect, the biggest prize.
Fun is the most important thing.
Yeah.
So what are the tournaments have you got coming up?
We've got the May... Shroud of Reaper, A New Hope. Of course, we've got LGT, we're hosting in there. So we've got Ambush and a normal 2,300 point game. And then coming up later in Christmas, we've got Sleigh Bells Ring, I think 2 or 3. I can't remember which number we got to now.
Beautiful. And you are also responsible for the Kings of War Masters website, I believe.
Yeah, so we update update that along with Steve and Steve, George and Janice. Keep that up to date, put in the new events and update the results on it, which can be quite tiresome and can be quite awkward. But and also between the committee, we run the Masters event.
You do. Having spoken to you and Jan and stuff, the amount of work you guys put in behind the scenes is obscene. And I think I speak for everyone, like, cheers.
No, bro, we try to be swans or ducklings, so our legs are flapping everywhere, but no one sees us doing all of that. Sometimes we dive down a bit, but most of the times we're trying to gracefully glide like a swan or a duck.
You do a fantastic job, and thanks for speaking to us.
No problem, thanks
so
very much.
If you're interested in any of the Shroud of the Reaper events, any of the other events that the guys have talked about today, go on the Kings of War Masters website. There's a Facebook page for it as well. Have a look at the events and come on down. Most of the events will have a event pack up on there, so you can see any narrative extra fun stuff, and we're good to go. There you have it. I'm back in the studio. And as we discussed with Walt, there are different types of gamers who get enjoyment from different aspects of the game, but I like to think it's more of a sliding scale and you can have some fun anywhere on that scale. So I like super competitive as well as holy narrative, and this weekend just goes to show you can have a bit of both. Well, the clean rule set of Kings of War, it often makes people think it's great for competition, and it is, but it also means there's huge scope for adding and adapting things without making it massively unbalanced. So as we saw talking to the TOs, they all have different ideas on how to add in things that could make the game a bit more fun and narrative, but that also adds some extra tactical challenges for the competitive gamers too. So there are no hard rules to your imagination, but even adding in a little bit can create some Hollywood moments, and you'll remember them forever. And let's face it, scones are delightful, but we'd all rather have them with big dollops of cream and jam on. Right, at this point, I'm guessing you're wondering, well, how did I do? And Garrick proved to be the hero he absolutely is. So game one was against Todd, and it was quite intense, and the magic items played a massive part in that. He had a Kingdoms of Men army, and I whittled it down with my shooting, my throwing dogs taking apart his Tormentor allies, because Todd has to rely on Nightstalker allies, and my Brox exploding with a Crystal Pendant annihilated the other unit. And unfortunately, his Hammer of Measured Force on his Foot Guard Horde killed Garrick, overran into my Iron Guard, and then killed them too. The Brewer Sharpness on the Butcher allies was also especially nasty, and in the gay end, it was a surprising draw. And game two was against Max, and we pretty much spent the entire game giggling, because Max is a giggler, and I spend all my time trying to make him giggle. So he had a flying, shooty Northern Alliance list, and a similar one had utterly decimated my halflings last time we played. So this time I was ready, and I waited one flank, killed enough that my regiments could march over into his control zones, the ordered march coming in beautifully there, while Garrick and some boys held the centre. He spent a couple of rounds shooting my Iron Guard, who just sat there laughing at his attempts. So unfortunately, they ran into an equally solid wall of Ice Naiads and slowly got flank charged. And in the end, it was another draw. Two in a row. It's never happened to me before. So everything to play for. Game three was against another old nemesis in the shape of John Guns and his Abyssal Dwarves. It was a cagey game, trying to outmaneuver each other around a central forest. But in the end, I just couldn't grind through his blocking units fast enough, and I lost 4-3 on tokens as his big dragony thing nicked one in the last turn. So on to day two, and game four was against Ashley, who I'd not played before, and it's always nice to play new people. And his Nightstalkers were a tricky prospect, but thanks to the Orb of Light item, as I said earlier, one unit could ignore stealthy, so I managed to shoot off his Void Lurker in round one or two, something like that. It was an interesting game. His bloody bloodworm regiment just wouldn't bloody die, and it was a hard grind, but he struggled to pop units because I'm dwarves and I'm rock hard, and I'd never ever seen so many wavered dwarf units fail their headstrong, and in the end I managed to get through and win for me. So at this point, two draws, one win, one loss. So last game against Matt's Empire of Dust, and this was another win. So as you can only score one push token on a unit now, I put them on my cheap badger swarms on the left, which are hunting mastiffs, but I use badgers because badgers are better than dogs, with the aim of running up his weaker flank. And my iron guard basically pushed up the front and acted as blockers in the middle. So I had to turn a load of units around to deal with his flying pharaoh, but I got him in the end, and I managed to push up the right flank, and they all got, badgers got through the hole, and I won. So five super close games, and Garrick did me proud, despite being Imperial. Also, a big shout out to Florence on her first tournament, who calmly sauntered in and won Best Army with her beautiful Kingdoms of Men. So well done, Florence. And, well, I had a brilliant weekend. I think I came fifth overall, which is a pretty good result for me. I'm usually hanging around just outside the podiums, so I'm quite happy with that one, especially with an army I've not used before. And we learnt that competitive gamers aren't necessarily the power gaming win-at-all-costs amoral sociopaths we sometimes believe them to be. And they're actually a fantastic bunch who just want to have some fun too. So I hope this inspires some more competitive gamers to have some narrative fun and some more narrative gamers to come along to a tournament and have some fun. So I've got to go now, because that halfling army is not going to paint itself, no matter how much I swear at the damn thing. So thank you, Mantic Universes, Muppers, Muppets. Thank you, Muppets, and good night.